My study next week is the laws of tzedakah as they apply to Purim, meaning the mitzvah of matnas aniyim, because there are various differences between the general laws of tzedakah as they apply the whole year round, and the special laws of tzedakah as they apply on Purim. Okay, so let's get started, and we begin on page 1 with a Gemara in Masechta Ksuvos. And the Gemara itself is interested in darshaning a pasuk. This is actually, I'm sorry, on page 2. A pasuk in Tehillim. So first, before we read the Gemara, let's just read the pasuk in Tehillim. This is in the 106th chapter of Tehillim. It says, "Ashrei shomrei mishpat oset tzedaka b'chol eis." In other words, this seems to be a category of those who fulfill the mitzvah of tzedaka on a continuous basis, and that's what the Gemara in Ksuvos is going to try to understand. I'll give you the broader context. Why is this very fundamental halacha in tzedakah? How did it creep its way, sneak its way into Masechta Ksuvos? And the answer is the Gemara there is discussing the obligation of a husband within the framework of marriage, of ksuba, to support not only his wife, but also his children in event of divorce, and possibly even her children, if she has children from another marriage. That's a whole to-do. So in the context of supporting one's children, the Gemara raises the possibility that this is a mitzvah of tzedakah. Now, here's the complicated, and what I'm about to present to you now is the question of questions when you learn the laws of tzedakah. And that is, there are many financial responsibilities and obligations that we have within the framework of halacha, and if they are not tzedakah obligations, but rather fall under some other mitzvah or chovah, then they cannot be used for tzedakah. Now, what do I mean by that? There's a certain allotment of one's finances that should be earmarked for tzedakah. Again, we're not discussing that issue right now. That's an issue unto itself. Is it 10%? Is it 20%? And how do you calculate it? And what's included? And somebody once asked me about taxes, because here in Israel, your tax money goes to support the state of Israel, so maybe that's tzedakah. Bituach Lumi here in Israel. Okay, fine. But leaving all those issues out, One thing we have to know is that if you're earmarking a certain sum of money from your income for tzedakah, then you cannot use that money for some other obligation and deduct it from your miser money, if it's miser. So let's say, for example, I have an income of 1,000 and I set aside 100 for tzedakah. I can't use that 100 to fulfill mitzvahs, because then I'm trying to kill two birds with one stone, if you follow me. I'm trying to use, you know, the same funds for both tzedakah and another chovah. So let's say, for example, I have to be poda my son, he's my firstborn, and peterechem, and so forth, and I have to give 5 shloim to the kohen. I can't say, well, I'm going to use 5 shloim for my tzedakah money in order to fulfill that mitzvah, and so forth and so on. But what we're discussing now, Rabosai, has nothing to do with that issue. That is the issue in Hilchos Tzedakah. But what we want to know is, are there certain responsibilities that are so fundamental that your finances have to go to those fundamental responsibilities even before you calculate tzedakah? And again, I don't want to give you the whole shiur in 1 minute, but just to give you an example so your brains are on track with me, if let's say I can save a person's life by spending money, you know, I can't, let's say I'm not a lifesaver, but I could hire a lifesaver to save this fellow who's drowning. So I'm obligated to do that under a different mitzvah. Not the mitzvah of tzedakah. That's the mitzvah of hatzolas nefashos, which the Gemara in Sanhedrin derives from a pasuk, vashevoso lo. So again, if you were asking me, can I use my tzedakah monies that I've allotted in order to save a life? That's one question, and probably the answer is going to be no, because this is a separate independent chova. But if you're asking me, I have allotted money that I can spend, what comes first? Saving someone's life and fulfilling the mitzvah of hatzolas nefashos, or tzedakah, to give to an ani, a poor person, then certainly we're going to try to prove that pikuach nefesh comes first. And if you happen to have printed out these pages from the olamot.net, you'll see a sefer called Avas Tzedakah, which is on page 10, and you'll see that he has a whole list of financial mitzvos that you have to fulfill that come even before tzedakah. Because he's got Aleph, Beis, Gimel, and Dalet. Only when he gets to Dalet is he talking about the mitzvah of tzedakah for an ani. But before that, he has a case of someone who's being taken away for shmad. He has somebody who is being taken away as a prisoner. He has someone whose life might be in danger. And after he gets finished with all those financial obligations, then he's ready for the mitzvah of tzedakah. So why do I say this as an introduction to the Gemara in Masechet Ksuvos? Because the Gemara in Masechet Ksuvos talks about someone who is doing tzedakah b'chol eis. Now, if you translate the word tzedakah here in this pasuk into literally, it sounds like we're talking about the mitzvah of tzedakah. But in fact, the Gemara takes it in a totally different direction. We're not talking about the mitzvah of tzedakah. We're talking about another obligation, which is a constant, perpetual obligation, and is not tzedakah in the technical sense, but it's called by David HaMelech as tzedakah because it's a kind of chesed. It's a kind of goodness that you do for someone. And the Gemara says in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, this is Hazan Banav Ubnosav Shem Ktanin. We're referring to a father who is supporting his children, his young children. And if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, Banav Ubnosav Aktanim, Shetamid Yom Valaila Heim Olav. That when the pasuk says Bechol Eis, it's because this obligation is a constant obligation. Yom Valaila, Rashi says, a person as a father is obligated to support his young children. And Rashi now has to ask himself the following question: well, why do you call that tzedakah? Isn't a father obligated to support his children? So Rashi says it's not a separate independent obligation. He's tzedakah. He's not obligated at all under any particular obligation as a father. But rather it comes under the mitzvah of tzedakah. And Rashi is explicit. He says, She'eino chiyuv olav bahem. He's not obligated to support them. So what's going on over here? You're telling me, Rashi, that I'm not obligated to support my young children and therefore I can subtract that money and consider it as tzedakah? And not only that, every moment I support them, it's tzedakah b'chol eis, tamid. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva and he asks the following question: what does the word ktanim mean? You and I might translate the word ktanim, one of ktanim, as infants. A 1-year-old, a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old, maybe even a 6-year-old. Or the word ktanim could be translated as older children who are less than bar mitzvah. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, if we're talking about young children below the age of 6, that's a paternal obligation to support them, and has nothing to do with the mitzvah of tzedakah. That is his obligation. So even before we get to tzedakah, he's got to pay that money. Once the child reaches the ripe old age of 6, then he no longer has to support his children, and then it becomes tzedakah. Says Rav Moshe, but in our generation, where a child, even a teenager, is not capable of supporting himself, especially if he's going to school, going to yeshiva, he says that up until the age of 16, the parents are obligated to support the children. And at the point that the child reaches the age of 16, and the child is now ready, theoretically, to stand on his own, but he wants to continue his education, and certainly his Torah education, at that point it becomes tzedakah. The father is no longer obligated to support his children, and now it becomes tzedakah. So could you imagine, Rav Osai, that if I am an average... What's the average income in Canada? Is it 50,000, 100,000? I don't even know. I have no clue.
No idea.
Nobody has an idea? I'm asking a bunch of Canadians. I thought Canadians would know.
It's not enough, bro. Whatever it is, it's not enough.
It's never enough, right. Okay. Well, let's just throw out a figure. Let's say the average income in Canada would be, let's say, $100,000. I'm just throwing out a number, right? And his 16-year-old son wants to go to the University of Toronto. Or he wants to go... What?
You don't have to go that far. He wants to go to Jewish day school.
Okay. Jewish...
expensive.
Jewish high school. Because again, up until the age of 16, according to Rav Moshe, he's obligated to support his children. But now the child is 18. So he wants to go off to yeshiva. Okay, let's say he wants to learn in Riverdale, in Tells, or he wants to learn in... what's that yeshiva in Toronto? Near Israel. Right? So now, Near Israel sends the father a bill for $10,000. A year at Ner Yisrael. I'm just making up numbers. I have no clue what a year a tuition in Ner Yisrael. See, now he has two options. Either he can apply for scholarship, or he can pay the $10,000. So he pays the $10,000. His son enters into his third year in Ner Yisrael. He's now 16 years old. He's ready to enter into Beis Medrash. And how much miser is his father obligated to give? Zero. Why? Because he gave $10,000 to Ner Yisrael. Now, this is not a pitch for Ner Yisrael. They have their own fundraisers, and Bobby will tell you how good of a fundraiser I am. But what I mean to say is that since his son is already 16 years old, any money that he gives to his son, like paying tuition for his son, above that age, becomes tzedakah. And he could therefore subtract it from his miser money, which is all of $10,000 in this case. So basically, one check to Ner Yisrael to pay his son's tuition, and he's potaver, and he's completely exempt from any miser stuff. Joe, do you have any questions on that?
No, I just need clinics to cry. That's what happened.
Oh, I don't know why you're crying. I thought you'd be very happy about this news, you know? Okay.
We should be able to keep those tuition
bills down. Yeah. I can't help you with that. I once had a father who told me he was spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on tuition for his 6th kid. But he was, Baruch Hashem, he was doing financially well. I mean, after he paid tuition, he wasn't doing so well. But, all right. So now we have the Gemara Ksubis. So the Gemara Ksubis says, Hazan banavu b'nosav shem ktanim. Notice they're above the age of 6. And that's called Oset Staka B'chol Eis. Every moment that he supports his children above that age is considered Staka. And this is codified by the Shulchan Aruch. If you happen to have page 3, that Simon Reish Nun Aleph, which is the main Simon and Stoka, he says, Hanosein Lebonov Ubnosov Hagdolim She'eno Chayavim Zonosehem. Okay, in other words, he's pointing out that it's beyond the age where he's obligated. If they're very, very young, so it means they're above the age of six. And why is he supporting his children? So again, you could say he's putting food on the table for them. He says, "Kedei lamed es abonim Torah." I'm not sure exactly why he has to choose that example. Lahanig habonos b'derech yeshara. I don't know. He pays some sort of musar organization to keep his daughters in shape. I don't know. And then he says that all this is considered stuck. Okay. Fine. So that's point number one. Now, point number two, which maybe I should have started with this point, I don't know which came first, is a pasuk in Parshas Re'eh. And this you'll see on the top of your page one, it's the first source. Ki yeh becha evyon me'achad achecha. It's a little bit hard for me to see it here. And he says, b'achad sharecha. And then it says, b'artsecha. Biartzecha, Asher Hashem Elokecha Nosein Loch, Lo Sa'ameitz Es Levova, Lo Sikpotz Es Yodcha Me'achicha, Evyon, Ki Pasach Tiftach Es Yodcha Lo, etc., etc. And then if you fast forward to Pasuk Yud, Nason Titein Lo, V'lo Yera Levovcha Besitcha Lo. So we have here, in this Pasuk, according to the Sifri, which Rashi quotes here in the Kitzur, Rashi gives you a summary of the Sifri, an entire system, or shall we say, a system of priorities for tzedakah. So let's start from the beginning. It says, Ki yeh becha evyon. So Rashi says, Hatoev toev kodem. That's a kind of very ambiguous Rashi. What does he mean? Hatoev toev kodem. So basically what that means is, instead of the word ta'ev, we'll substitute the word nitzrach. Nitzrach means he's in need. You know, ta'ev really means he's desperate for something. The more desperate you are, the more intense and profound is the mitzvah of tzedakah. So we're talking about the recipient now. I'm the big shot, and I'm the donor, and I want to contribute for this recipient. How desperate is the recipient? Okay, so that's going to be number one, and that's what we want to talk about. How do you set up a system of priorities for desperateness, if there's such a word? Who is considered more desperate, more needy? Say it again. Yudi, did you say something? Okay, what did you say, Joe?
No, we just missed about a minute. It froze for about.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, all I said so far in the last minute, it wasn't world shattering, is that we have to determine who's considered more needy, because Rashi says Hatoev Toev Kodem. Okay. Then Rashi goes on, and he tells us Me'achad Achicha. What does the Torah mean when it says Me'achad Achicha? Rashi says, "Achicha me'avicha kodem li'achicha me'imecha." Fine, you have two brothers. You've got your paternal brother and your maternal brother. So Rashi says, "Your paternal brother, you share the same father, comes first." Okay, then. Then Rashi goes on to talk about echad b'sharecha. Rashi says that's the principle of Aniye Ircha Kodem, so your local people come first. And then it says here Me'artzecha, and that teaches you that Eretz Yisrael has a special status in Staka. Fine. That's what we have in Rashi. Okay. But now let's talk about some other situation. We said that there may be other mitzvos that impose a financial obligation that come even before tzedakah. So the first one on the list, I think, should be pikuach nefesh. we have a principle in halacha that pikuach nefesh is doche kol haTorah kula. So that certainly should come before tzedakah. And we'll see how this is brought down in the poskim in just a minute. And then we can add to the list pigeon shvuyim. Because if you take a look at the Gemara in Bava Basra, which is the fourth source on page 1, it says here that pigeon shvuyim is a mitzvah rabbah. And the reason why it's called a mitzvah rabbah is because it's possible that the captors will put their captured person to death. So that also comes on the Sofek Pikuach Nefesh. But now, what about the Mishnah in Peah, which is the third source on your page, which we recite every day in Davening in Shacharis, Eilu Dvarim She'en Lahem Shir, and in that Mishnah it says, after giving a whole list of mitzvahs, it says, Talmud Torah Keneged Kula. And it sounds like Talmud Torah has a very unique status, just as we said Pidgin Shvuyim is called a mitzvah rabbah. Talmud Torah is also a mitzvah rabbah in so far as it outweighs all the other mitzvahs. Now, what confuses my mind is that on the same list you have Hachnasas Kala. So I'm not sure if Hachnasas Kala is considered a very desperate situation, and therefore maybe it gets a certain significance, a certain status. So let's go back to the page that I showed you before, which is page 10. Okay, this is Rav Avraham Avidan, and he has a book called Avas Tzedakah, and he says the following: Barosh Seder Akadima, on the top of the priority list, is Kiyum Mesiras HaTorah. In other words, to spend money in order to guarantee the transmission of Torah. And therefore, if there's any situation of sakana, of danger to Kiyum Mesiras HaTorah, again, a phrase that's absolutely new to me, I never heard this phrase before, is that comes first on the list. And I'm not sure what he means here by Kiyum Mesiras HaTorah. Is he talking about the tzibur? We have to guarantee the transmission of Torah from one generation to the other. Or is he talking even about the yachid? So for example, if you look in the footnote, he mentions that Rabbi Akiva was willing to put his life in danger to teach Torah. Why is that so? After all, we have a mitzvah of Yehari Valyavar. The answer is because there's a special status called Torah Shal Rabin, which means the transmission of the Torah from one generation to the other. Rabbi Akiva was in charge of that transmission. And therefore, it could be that Talmud Torah Shal Rabin, to the extent that it guarantees the transmission of Torah to the next generation, that becomes like Pikuach Nefesh, with the Eharik Val Yavar, you have to even put your life into danger. And how much more so in such a case would you spend all the money that you have in order to protect the Mesiras HaTorah? I'll be honest with you, Rabosa, it's a very nice piece of lumbus. I don't believe it has too much practical application. But there was a case where one of the great Rosh Hashivas was taken captive. And this was in my youth. I'm not going to mention his name, you may know who I mean. And you might possibly argue that comes under Kiyum Mesiras HaTorah. But once again, it's kind of rare to find a situation like Rabbi Akiva and his dar, that in our generation also there are certain Chachmei Adar that are absolutely in charge of Mesiras HaTorah to the next generation. And now from this we go down to the next level, which is the Yachid. We're no longer talking about Talmud Torah, the Rabin. And that's called Hatzolas Yehudi Mishmat. A Jew is about to be taken by missionaries, let's say a young child, and he's going to be brainwashed. And the law is in Aruch Chaim Siman Shin Vav that we machal Shabbos in order to avoid such a situation. And this becomes like Pikuach Nefesh, even though we're not talking about the physical survival of the child. So I don't know what, you know, the way my mind works, and I apologize for this, is I'm thinking of families during the Shoah that gave their children to Christians, you know, babies, in order to save them. And what were the chances statistically that those children would ever grow up as Jews? I don't know. They say a story about Rabbi Blazer Silva that he was able to go into a school. What's it called?
Monastery.
A monastery, and he would be able to pick out the Jewish children, and some of them would even respond to Shema Yisrael. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but anyway, in the next level, he goes on to Safek Pikuach Nefesh, and he says that if you gathered money, you collected money for Talmud Torah, you'd be allowed to divert those funds that were designated L'chatchila for Talmud Torah for the sake of Hatzolos Nefashos, and even if it's a Safek of Hatzolos Nefashos. After that, he's ready for the mitzvah of tzedakah, and then we can talk about two brothers. One is a paternal brother, and one is a maternal brother, and we can talk about those laws of kedima. Now, on page 2, you will find, about halfway through the page, a Yerushalmi pair. And the Yerushalmi tells a story here about Rav Chama Bar Chanina and Rav Oshia that were on a teal. They were on a trip. And they visited the city of Lud. And there they saw a Beis Knesses. And Rav Chama turns to Rav Oshia. Now, I don't think he's boasting, but it sounds a little like he's boasting. And he says, Kama Mamon Shiku Avo Saitan. How much money did my forefathers invest or contribute to the building of this Beis Knesses? Now, from the very fact that he is boasting about it, and about very significant sums of money, apparently, Kama Mamon, it sounds like there may be a very significant status to the mitzvah of building a Beis Knesses. And once again, it might come under that mitzvah that precedes tzedakah. I don't know. It's like pikuach nefesh. You know, the shul, the community needs a synagogue. But yet, look at the response of Rav Oshia. This will really shock you, as it did me. He says to him, Kama nefashos shiku avos chakan. As if to say, how many lives were lost as a result of the fact that your family took that money and invested in the building of a synagogue. So the Pnei Moshe, my chavrus who was murdered, his name was Reb Moshe Chorsky, he used to say to me, the Pnei Moshe is the balabas on Yerushalmi. That was his phrase. And the Pnei Moshe says, the tov hoyalehem litain osan mos lelom bei Torah. Instead of giving that money to building a shul, they should have given that money to the students of Torah, to build up Torah. So if you take a look in the source right below the Yerushalmi, you have the Beis Yosef in Yoredei Siman Reish Mem Tes, and he quotes the Tashbetz, who in turn quotes Rabbeinu Shmuel. If I'm not mistaken, this Rabbeinu Shmuel is otherwise known as the Ma'arik. Anyway, he derives from this Yerushalmi two amazing conclusions. La'alocha number one, the mitzvahs beis haknesses adifa mi mitzvahs tzedaka, which means that the forefathers of Rabbi Chama had a choice between tzedaka and building a beis knesses, and they opted for tzedaka. I'm sorry, they opted for, excuse me, the building of the beis haknesses. But yet, after we see the response of Rav Oshia, we come to the conclusion that in a choice between beis haknesses and building up Torah, which, according to the language of the Pnei Moshe that we saw before, Lite Mos Lelomdei Torah, then the Mos for Lomdei Torah comes first, and that's more important than building a Beis HaKnesses. So he says, Tov Litein Stokel in Na'arim Lilmod Torah. I got a little offended here. He says, Na'arim Lilmod Torah. What about all the people Lilmod Torah? Do they have less of a mitzvah than the Na'arim? Maybe in the case of the Na'arim, it's a do or die situation. I don't know. And then he says, Olecholim Aniyim. Now, if I would remove those three words, I would understand what Rabbeinu Shmuel is saying. Milite lebeis haknesses, that if the choice is between Na'arim Lilmot Torah and Beis haknesses, then Na'arim Lilmot Torah takes precedence. But what confuses me, what throws me off, is that he adds here another clause, O lecholim anir. Now where does this come from? Cholim anim, that's already deep into the mitzvah of tzedakah. You know, now you're sinking your hand into the pocket of tzedakah. Till now we were talking about mitzvahs that come before tzedakah, like pikuach nefesh, and we spoke about pidyon shvuyim, we spoke about shmad, mesiras haTorah, and limud Torah itself. But now he throws in cholim anim. So let me ask you the following question. I've got $10 in my hand, and there are two people standing in front of me. One is a young fellow who wants to learn yeshiva, and he needs money to support himself for the learning of Torah. And the other one is Nebuchadnezzar Karani. He's a sick, poor person. He's not a great scholar. He's not going to yeshiva to learn. Who comes first? If not for the addition of these three words, I was absolutely convinced that what comes with the greatest priority is Litein Tzedakah L'Aniyim L'Na'arim L'Lmod Torah. In other words, the Na'arim here have two choices. They can go out and eke out a living. And you and I know of teenagers that came from poor families and they took jobs when they were 12, 13, 14 years old. Or they can go to yeshiva if somebody would just support them in yeshiva. So technically they're not really aniyim because they can support themselves, but that'll forfeit at the expense of Torah. That's what I thought came priority here, and therefore Rav Hoshea was not so excited about the building of the shul when that money could have gone for limud Torah. And building a shul is very important, but it takes a back seat to limud Torah. But now he adds cholim aniyim. So I don't know which of these two people should receive my $10. Bobby, what do you say?
I don't understand why he says chayli ani and chayli mani. In other words, if the person is a chayli, if it's yesh by sakana, then you're into pikuach nefesh. So
right. I guess you're right. Logically, the word cholim here cannot be pikuach nefesh. It's a chole who cannot work. Again, you know, hopefully the government will support him, but if he doesn't have governmental support for whatever reason in our contemporary life, then he's really...
If a person is not going to be able to eat, he's going to, like, starve.
Right.
Because you don't give him money.
Then it's pikuach nefesh.
That's priority. So
number one.
So money clearly can work.
Right.
And the young man can go out to work. I don't understand why there's a question that the money chayla needs to get money.
So let's qualify the question. What happens if this chole ani is not dying of starvation? In fact, there may be other people who could help support him, but you're obligated in the mitzvah of tzedakah, and he's an ani. He's a poor person. And if you question, well, you know, sometimes they knock on your door and you say to yourself, why am I giving this guy money? He looks like the healthiest specimen I've ever seen. He's like 6'4". He's got 54-inch biceps. Like, buddy, get a job. You know what I'm saying? Am I the only one who feels that way? Or, but he's a chole. And I've seen it, you know, here in Yerushalayim, you know, during certain hours of the night, you know, you have to make a decision. Either you're not answering the door, or that's all you're doing at night is answering the door. So he's a chole. And if you don't believe he's a chole, he has a letter from Rav Kanevsky that says he's a chole, right? So now, you know, you understand that he has to never, you know, panhandle. He can't support himself. He's not dying, so it's not pikuach nefesh. You know, Bobby's right. But I can take that same money and I can help support Torah because I have a young man who's at that, you know, crossroads, and he can either study Torah or go out and get a job. And he definitely needs some Torah study because he's a young fellow. He's not, you know, he's not like, okay, listen, buddy, you're 35 years old, it's about time you took a job, right? The guy is 16 years old, he's 17 years old, and he wants to learn in yeshiva. And I can give him $1,000 that it'll carry him for a couple of weeks. And if you give him $1,000, he gets another couple of weeks, and so forth and so on. But what about the chola ani who can't work, and he can barely scrape, eke out a living, meaning he's not dying. You know, maybe he's eating, instead of eating meat, he's eating potatoes, or instead of wearing, you know, a different shirt every day because he cleans his shirt, you know, he wears one shirt the whole week. Not because he's lazy, but because he simply can't afford another shirt. Well, let's say he's living in a dilapidated apartment, and the water is coming through the ceiling, and he's asking you to improve his very basic lifestyle to pay some sort of a tar guy to tar the roof. Or should I give that money to Tztaka? I'm sorry. Take that back. Or should I give up that money to Na'arim Lom Bei Torah? So this confuses me. I honestly don't know the answer. Yudi, I'm going to ask you a favor. First of all, I want to hear your opinion. But if you're not sure about it, if you could ask Rabbi Silver this question. It's such a basic question. It's stuck and I can't seem to find the answer. Go ahead, Yudi, what do you say? Who would you give your $10?
I was going to say two things, that I think times change, that there are a lot of these people that are possibly in a very difficult household that are collecting, and that's their parnasa. They're actually collecting, from my understanding of statistics, they can collect 20, 30,000, where somebody like me could be working for 6 months and not make that 20, 30,000. And his lashon here is an extreme lashon that is based on the term tolem ba'ashva. I mean, his makor here is an extreme case where they're really, really in a bad state. So it's not like stam daniyim that we see that are actually capable of going around and claiming, yes, I'm sick, I have the certificate and all that. And I can tell you that there are places that will give the certificates just like that. They say, it's valid. The certificate doesn't mean anything.
So Yudi, let me just summarize what you're saying and tell me if I understand you clearly. You have two people in front of you. Forget about certificates. Forget about fundraisers that are going from door to door that are collecting $20,000, $30,000 every, I don't know how many weeks. You're talking about someone who's nebuch really on the basic level. He's not pikuach nefesh, Bobby, but he really needs some basics. He's able to survive. But on the lowest level, you know what I'm saying? And there's another guy who wants to go to yeshiva, can't afford tuition, going to have to go to work, and give up yeshiva. Again, assuming you have the wherewithal, yet $10 is not really going to do it for either one of these two recipients. But I'm talking, let's lose it to you have a significant sum of money, you know, that could help him in some sort of substantial way. He could fix up his apartment, which is leaking. I don't know, he could buy himself a new pair of shoes or a suit. You can upgrade his food. And the other guy could take that significant amount of money and use it to pay yeshiva tuition. His other alternative is to go out and work. If I read you correctly, Yehuda, you're saying that you would give it to the poor person. Am I right? Did I read you? What's that phrase? Come over, Roger. You know.
I think that what he's doing in terms of the comparison is he's saying also you have to assess it. You have to assess how much you can do and how much you're actually going to be able to do.
Again, Yudi, I'm just.
I can't say one person and say, you know what, the next Ani, the next person who's the potential is coming down the block and I see him in the car with all the other 10 guys and I just gave it away to this one guy that I saved.
No, no. Again, Yudi, you know, you're right, but I'm just trying to push you for an answer in just, you know, what would you do with the money? These are the two situations. There's no fundraisers here. There are no documents. There's nothing. This is the honest to goodness truth. You have, let's say you, who do you give the money to? That's what I'm asking. What would you do with the money? I'm asking myself, Azaria Berzon, what would I do with the money? And on the one hand, you know, my heart goes out for the Ani because I could really help him significantly in many different ways, in terms of his food, in terms of his clothing, in terms of his shelter, the roof on his head. And I'm looking at the other guy and I'm saying, wow, it would be really great if he could learn Torah. That's a great thing. And my heart goes out for the person who's an Ani. And I would like to improve his basic situation. I'm asking now, what does the halacha say about that? And I read this line in the Beis Yosef, and it perplexes me, because the Beis Yosef says, Tov litein tzedaka lina'arim lilmod Torah o lecholim aniyim mi litein lebeis haknesses. Good. So I have these two Jews in front of me. We'll call one Reuven, one Shimon. The guy from the shul is, you know, he's collecting to build the synagogue. I know that I'm going to give the money to either Reuven or Shimon. I'm not giving it for the synagogue. That's crystal clear in the Ma'arit, in Rabbeinu Shmuel. But which of these two guys should I give the money to? And it doesn't, I don't see a clear answer in the text. Yeah, Joe, what do you say?
Why aren't you saying...
Yechiel, are you with me? Yechiel, are you with me?
Why aren't you saying,
okay, go ahead.
Is it?
Yeah.
So why aren't you saying that the fact that the Shulchan Aruch brings them together means that you have to look at them, you have to break up the money equally amongst them?
Okay, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right, Joe. You know, it's like, you know, like Joe. You know what you're saying is that basically I have two pressing needs. I don't know how to prioritize them. I really don't know how to prioritize them. So I'll split it. You know, shnayim oksim b'tal siachlok. I don't think that's the halach. But again, I would like to hear what Rav Silva has to say about this. I am honestly perplexed, because I'll tell you, Joe, if you want to say yachloku, in my humble opinion, that's dodging the issue. Why is that dodging the issue? No. Don't take this personally. I'm learning this sugi with you. Why is this called dodging the issue? Because the issue is priorities. Which mitzvah comes first? You'll tell me split it. That's not an answer, because if there is a priority here, then I don't split it. Now, maybe there's such a thing. Well, no, I'm just saying, Bobby, if I have two brothers and they're both paternal brothers, then I'll split it, because there's no way I can flip a coin unless, by the way, I should even add a postscript to that. If one of my two brothers is my older brother and the other is my younger brother, then there is a din of kedima. Esla rabos achicha gadol. I mean, you have to know if that's the oldest brother or just an older brother. I'm not getting into that. But let's assume I have two younger brothers, just to make life easy. Yachloku, I might as well split the money. Or maybe if my brother Elliot comes knocking on my door before Stephen, then I give Elliot, because ein mavirin al mitzvahs. You know, that's also a din of kedima. But if they both knock at the same time, then ein ochinam yachloku. But I'm not talking about yachloku. I'm talking about categorizing what are the critical needs and where does the tzedakah of money get allotted. I'm not going to say yachloku, because if I say yachloku, then I'm dodging the question. That's my humble opinion. Bobby?
Unless you're saying that they're on the same level. In other words, that could be the halakha.
Could.
That could be the halakha. That's really the way he's mashma, is that they're literally on the same level. And
no, you're right. You're right, Bobby. You may be right, but I'll tell you the truth. Intuitively, it's very hard for me to accept that. Because what we're at here, I'll give you an example. Bobby, listen to my example. My father needs help. Financial help. Gevaldige mitzvah, no? My Rebbe needs help. Without thinking, and I'm asking you to do this without thinking, who are you going to give the money to?
My father.
Absolutely right. And you're wrong. Meaning you're right, because I would have said the exact same thing, and Allah is not like that. Does anybody know which Mishnah we want to quote in order to prove that the halacha is not like that? Not the way you thought, Bobby, or the way I thought. Which Mishnah, David?
I forget, but I know the text.
But what Masecht is it in?
Rabbi Kaiden. Oh, there's a Rabbi Kaiden.
Where is it? What Masecht? I'm sorry, I'm quizzing you. This is very uncomfortable. It's in Masecht above Mitzia. There's a Mishnah above Mitzia. The Mishnah wants to know the following. Your father wants to get his Aveda back. Your Rebbe wants to get his Aveda back. It doesn't say Achloku. It says Rabo Kodem La'ovit. Why? Shehu Meviel Li'olam Abba. And that's how we paskin in Shulchan Aruch in Hilchus Tzedakah. Kibbut Avaim is up there in the Big Ten, right? It's on the Decalogue, last time I looked. And yet, I'm going to give the money to my Rebbe. Again, there are all sorts of conditions. By the way, this is not even Allah Lamaisa, because there's so many ifs. There's so many, yeah, he has to be a Rebbe Muvok, and he's got to have taught you most of your Torah, and he's a Rebbe that's not paid for his job. He teaches you Torah gratis. When was the last time you met a Rebbe who teaches you gratis? Well, you met him. You met him right now, because I don't get paid for my Skype. Okay. but I'm not your Rebbe Muvok. But if, let's say, you had your Rebbe Muvok, theoretically, the poskim write that in Hilchus Tzedakah, your Rebbe comes before your father. So, we're not saying, Bobby, you know, everybody's equal over here. And let's go Yachloku. There are dinim kedima here. So, you know, you're right. He doesn't give us a clue which comes first. But I am absolutely convinced that if you asked a posek, don't ask me because I'm not a posek, he would tell you which comes first. You may get a machlokas a poskim too, if you ask two poskim. You know, as it works, that you know, you ask two Jews, you get three opinions, right? So let's take a look at the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch is on page 2. And he says, Simon Reish Mem Tes, Sif Tezvav Gavoy Tztoka, Sheesh Biyon Umos, Lutztoka, Yasiyam Bahem Besulos, Anios, She'ein Tztoka Gedolim Izu. Okay, now we're really in the thick of laws, the laws of Tztoka. And we're talking about a Besula Ania who has to get married. And the only source I could think of for this Shulchan Aruch is that Mishnah in Peah, which mentions Achnosas Kala. And he says, Ein lecha tztoka gedola mizu. Now, honestly, I have to ask Chatoi Nimazkir, if you would ask me where to put Achnosas Kala, I would have put it way down on the list. Way down on the list. I hear it, it comes out of my ears. I assume the same thing is in Toronto, maybe even worse, I don't know. But here, where I hang around, you can't step, you know, you can't go more than 10 steps before somebody hits you for Achnosas Kala. Everything is Achnosas Kala. I say that, you know, I'm just saying that the Shulchan Aruch puts Achnosas Kala in a case of a Kala Ania Besula. It's her first marriage, and she's too poor to get married, and you can give her a financial aid so she can get married. Top on the list, Ein Lecha Tztoka Gedola Mizu. So again, we finish with the mitzvah of pikuach nefesh. We finish with the mitzvah of pidyon shvuyim. We finish with the mitzvah of building a base knesses and talmud torah. We did all that already. We finished all that. But what's the pressing need now? Tztoka. And who's a poor person who needs tztoka? And who's first top on the list? Ein lecha tztoka gedola mizu. Is marrying off a young poor girl. That's to me is mind-boggling. I never ever saw this before, and I thank Hashem that He gave me the opportunity to start preparing for this year, because everything is mamish hitting me from all sides. Chidushim left, right, and center. Now we have a Mishnah in Masecht Horios. If you take a look at the bottom of your page 1, the Mishnah gives a long list of priorities for saving a life. Okay then? Nu? Who comes first? A man or a woman? So guess what? If it's a matter of pikuach nefesh, ha'ish kodem li'isha. But if it's a matter of tzedakah, for example, the Mishnah gives an example of lechasot, to, you know, to clothe herself, then a woman comes before a man. So basically, Rabosai, in the laws of tzedakah, and I emphasize the word tzedakah, I'm not talking about other financial obligations like pikuach nefesh. Who comes first, a man or a woman?
A woman
comes first. And this Mishnah in Masechta Horios, which is addressing a whole different issue, now becomes the main source for the laws of tzedakah. So, for example, in Shulchan Aruch, which you'll see on page 4, Siman Reish Nun Beis Sif Aleph says, Pidyon Shvuyim Kodem Leparnosas Aniyim. So before tzedakah we have Pidyon Shvuyim. Ulechasosam, even if it means that the Aniyim need clothing to wear. The Ein Mitzvah Gedola Kepidyon Shvuyim. In other words, Pinyan Shvuyim comes before the mitzvah of tzedakah because it has an element of pikuach nefesh. And here on the same page 4, you will see a Chochmas Adam, the same author as the Chai Adam, Klal Kuf Mem Hei, and he writes that it's a great mitzvah of Farnes Haniyim Cholim. Again, I'm assuming he has the word Cholim to tell you that this guy is real, is for real. You know, he has no way of supporting himself. And then he goes on in the second line and he says that although if he's hungry for bread, that's your priority number one, right? That's kodem l'chol atzdokos. But then he goes on in the next paragraph, ches, and he writes, kol dovashu sakonis nefashos, is that takes precedence over the aniyim. And look at his two examples. Okay, his second example is Pidyon Shvuyim. That's okay. Well, what's his first example? Lifroa mas lahamelech ulasar. The man never can pay his taxes. And if he can't pay his taxes, we don't know what's going to happen to him. They're going to take him away. That, he says, ein lecha mitzvah gedola mizu. Now,
because it's going to run into Pidyon Shvuyim after that.
Correct. Basically, Joe, what he's saying is that to save a person who can't pay his taxes from the governmental authorities is like Pidyon Shvuyim.
Not today.
And not today. And he says, "V'yesh kama aniyim." He says, even though there are many aniyim, she'ein lahem litein lech. V'yakum v'yafshitum arumen. He says that even if there are other aniyim who don't have money, if this one is being pressed by the government to pay his taxes, he's gonna get beaten up. They're gonna strip him naked. He probably also means they're gonna lock him up in a prison. I don't know. He doesn't mention that. The kol shkein l'pidyon shvuyim kodem afilu mitalmid Torah. Now, what does he mean? Kodem afilu talmud Torah. So let's go back to the previous paragraph in the Chokhmas Adam, and he writes that aniyim cholim. That's number one, and kodem l'chol atzdokos im ein b'sakonas mavus. So we're not talking about a case of pikuach nefesh. He says he's answering Bobby's point from before. Ela litein l'aniyim kidei tzarka. So there's the basic, you know, life or death situation. You need $5 to live, and then you need $10 to get called tzarka. So in between 5 and 10, that's the greatest tzedaka of aniyim chol. And then he writes, v'gam tzrichim livnos beis hakneses, or shar tzarchei beis hakneses. Let's say he has two choices. He's got this ani who needs money for his basics, but he's not about to drop dead. And he has money to be given his other choice to the Beis HaKnesses. Adif tvei liten lebeis HaKnesses. This was Rabbeinu Shmuel, quoted by Tashbetz, that Beis HaKnesses comes before. But im ein v'yodo maspik l'shneem, let's say he doesn't have enough money, but he has enough money, las fakas na'arim lelom de Torah, then he says, that comes even before Beis HaKnesses. So I get the impression, Rabosa, and again, you're not going to like this. You're not going to like this at all. That according to the Chachmas Adam, if you have a choice between Aniyim Cholim and the Na'arim Lilmot Torah, then Na'arim Lilmot Torah takes precedence. Why do I get that impression? Because he opens up the paragraph by saying that Aniyim Cholim is number one on the list. Kodem L'Kol HaTzedakos. But then he qualifies that. When is it Kolim Kol HaTzedakos? That's when you're sinking into the mitzvah of tzedakah. But before you sink into the mitzvah of tzedakah, first address the mitzvah of sakonas moves and all the examples he gives later on about pidyon shvuyim. Okay, let's say you don't have that issue, but what about the Beis HaKnesses? That seems to take precedence. And not only that, if you have money for the Beis HaKnesses or for Na'arim Lilmot Torah, then earmark the money for Na'arim Lilmot Torah. And all this is before you get to the mitzvah of tzedakah. I don't know, that's how I'm reading it. I ask your Rebbe, Yudi, and see if he agrees that I'm reading this Chachmas Adam correctly. I think the Chachmas Adam is a little bit clearer, although it's not 100% clear, than what we saw in the Beis Yosef. All right, I want to wrap this up because I see it's getting late. But I want to present to you one final idea over here. And that is the question that I found here in an article by Rav Yirmiyah Kaganov. Does anybody know Rav Yirmiyah Kaganov?
Yeah.
He's actually a first cousin to my Mechutan in the Fleds. And what do you say?
They're from Chicago?
I think somewhere in the Midwest, maybe Chicago. Kaganov. I think his grandfather was a Rosh Yeshiva in Chicago. Yeah, in Skokie, if I remember correctly. So Rabbi Yirmiyah is a great Talmud Chacham, outstanding Talmud Chacham. And he has an article which I found online called How Do I Distribute My Tzedakah? Okay, it's I printed it out from my computer. It's seven pages. So he writes the following. He says, can I pay tuition from Meiser money? Rav Moshe Feinstein rules that one should not pay tuition for his sons and daughters in elementary school or high school from Meiser funds. However, he says, once they finish up with high school, then all that comes from Meiser money. Then he writes the following. This I found very lovish. He says, someone who refrains from taking a tuition reduction for which he is eligible may pay the discrepancy with Meiser money. Shut Igris Moshe Yoredeya Chelik Beis Simon Kuf Yud Gimel. So what does he say over here? Let's say, for example, I could be eligible for a scholarship. So let's say instead of paying $20,000, I would get away with paying $10,000. If he goes ahead and he foregoes his rights to the scholarship, then he can deduct the extra differential here, that $10,000, because he could have gotten a scholarship that would reduce it from 20 down to 10. He could pay that $10,000 from tzedakah money, because once he has the eligibility of a tuition reduction, if he pays that without taking advantage of that eligibility, then that's called tzedakah. Then he writes, if paying tuition without resorting to Meiser funds creates hardship, Joe, this was your question before. He doesn't give an answer. He says one should ask a shaylas chacham. And then he concludes this paragraph by saying yeshiva gedola tuition may be paid from Meiser money. He has a whole discussion here about the following question, which we don't have time for now. He's got a whole long piece on the following question, if you're interested. He says that although tzedakah money should be distributed locally before sending it out of town, I had one of my good chaverim in Toronto who told this to me over and over again. Anyway, he says that even though one should distribute the majority of his tzedakah money to local communal needs, he should nevertheless make sure to set aside money to give some contribution to each person who comes to the door with a legitimate cause, even if he comes from out of town. And if he comes from Eretz Yisrael, as we mentioned at the outset, that's an extra plus. Okay. And then he goes on and on and on. He has a beautiful story here from the Chafetz Chaim. I if anyone's interested in this topic, this is a must-read article. I don't know if you can see it here. Maybe if I shut the light, you'll be able to see it. Can you see it? Forget it. You're just looking at me. Anyway, it's called "How Do I Distribute My Tzedakah" by Rav Yirmiyah Kaganov, and you can get it right off the internet. So with this, I would bid you farewell, and you'll let me know if you want to get together on Tinus Esther.
Is that going to be okay with the Rav?
I got no problems. I mean, I don't have a, you know, I'm very interested in this whole...
Close. I mean, I don't know how much time you have before, after, you know, is that going to run into having to get to McGill reading?
Well, no, we have something here, you won't believe it, called Shushan Purim. Anyway, Joe, I just wanted to say this. I happen to be very, very emotionally involved in this topic. It fascinates my mind. And I really appreciate that you guys tolerated my shiur today, because I know there are a lot of points in the shiur where I was very, very confused, but this is a profound sugya for me. We can go back to Shvilei Pinchas if you like, and that's fine with me as well. But just if you can give me some feedback, so I know, you know, how to prepare myself for this shoot. All right, then? Yes, Yechiel?
Yeah, I think we just have the rabbi, I think, not today. For us, I'm in Toronto, I'll be here, but I think we're here on...